Welcome back to Hakuna Lorcana, a worry-free podcast about the Disney stories we love and the Lorcana cars they inspire. I'm Caleb.
And I'm Katie. Today, we are talking about Lilo and Stitch, the 2002 movie that taught us that Ohana means family, and family means nobody gets left behind or forgotten. But before we dive into the lore, Caleb, how was your weekly lore count?
I always start this off with a sigh, don't I? I gotta think about it a little bit. You know, we'll go with like a 13. Sounds about right, maybe a 14. Last week has been quite a whirlwind for Lorcana, I would say. Maybe the most action-packed week as far as news is concerned. And it's just kind of been weighing on me. There's so many different things to like think about and consider. There's just been so much news about Ursula's return and the challenge events and the two-game format. And we just got comprehensive rules and all that stuff is awesome. But like on social media, you know, I live on Twitter a lot. And so there's just been some like infighting amongst the broader like Lorcana community, you know? So yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to like, I don't know if I could just take like 30 seconds to say like Ryan, Steve, Rochelle, the whole Ravensburger team, you guys are doing awesome. Don't let the haters get to you. Okay. Like what you're doing is incredibly unprecedented and your efforts are really appreciated by us and the majority of the Lorcana community. So don't let like the loud squeaky wheels like think that everything is falling apart. Like this is awesome. And I can't wait to see these challenge events and like the set championships coming up. Like I'm super excited for all that. Like all this stuff is going to get off the ground and it's going to be awesome. So I don't know. It's weighing on me a little bit, but I also know like there is like a silent majority, so to say, that's like, this is awesome. Like all this is great. And you know, we don't go onto Twitter to just like complain about everything.
You know? And sometimes I forget that there are people that I do think they think it's fun to debate other people. So I always have to remember that like some people they're like, I'm having fun
that's
debating.
A good point.
so I always like, I'm always trying to keep an open mind that some people like to them, they're like, this is a healthy challenge, but I'm with you or I'm open-minded. I'm excited. I'm appreciative. Just because it's fun to be at the beginning. It's exciting to be on this side of it.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't want to, I also like a sign of a healthy community is where there is dialogue and there is like pushback and like refining through conversation. So that is super healthy. And like there are people that raise concerns and do it in a very appropriate way. Yeah. So I do want to affirm that too. It's just like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So it can feel like a lot, but yeah, I've had a lot of fun playing Lorcana this week though. I've been really grinding my Ruby Sapphire deck, whether it's in person or on Pixelborn. And I got to, we had a, you know, just like a small little tournament at our LGS and, won my first two matches, you know, or games, I guess, come from behind. But then I, of course, ran into two aggro decks and got just destroyed by them. So that was that. But yeah, I got to play quite a number of in-person games. So that was great. But yeah, Katie, where's your lore count at? Where'd you say? How are you doing?
Well, I feel bad because I'm on the other side of that. So like my lore, we're at an 18 because I finished second, which is the highest I think I've placed in a tournament.
Hey, let's go. We take that.
You know, and it's tricky because it was best of one, which is, you know, even more controversial than a best of two is a best of one because you just whatever hand you get is the hand you got and that's it. So I don't know if past results will indicate future performance when it comes to the best of one being what's going to happen. I ran Steel Song, which I think like that's my favorite deck forever.
It's so good.
It is, but it is. It's 50% of the time it works all the time. I don't know. There's a best of three tournament coming up, and I'm gonna run Steel Song and see how it does. And it's the audition because you know it's almost time to pick a deck for set tournaments, or I could just pick a different deck for every day because I'm probably gonna do more than one.
Oh man,
set tournament. Because I need that Stitch so bad. It's all I think about.
I know. We need shiny Stitches. We need play mats that say champion on them. The Steel Song deck is like super good right now. I think it's a top tier, if not like the best deck right now. So you picked a good deck.
Yeah, it's good. It's just it's a lot of paying attention, which is something I struggle with. When my husband's like, isn't that like the most important part, to pay attention? I'm like, that is a good point. It is important to pay attention when you're playing a match. So that's more practice to come, because hopefully I want to do the Las Vegas Challenge event. But I also saw the registration for Atlanta, which made me feel like probably not going to go to Vegas or any of them. But, and the thing is, I don't think it's indicative of anything about Lurkana. I just think that's how events are now. Like, I don't want to sound old, but there was a time where you're like, I want to go to this Grand Prix, or I want to go to a concert. And then you just did it. And it wasn't. But like now I feel like there's so much. You have to know what time the tickets go. There's a line. There's a queue. It crashes. So I feel very elderly when it comes to registration for things.
I'm a pretty avid concert goer, like always have been since late high school. And being in Colorado, we're pretty spoiled with some great venues. And like trying to get tickets to Red Rocks,
it's crazy.
It's insane. And so this whole like process of like queue lines and things breaking down, and like only some people get it, like more people want, you know, there's more demand than supply. Like it's pretty familiar to me, I guess. Yeah. And so it doesn't feel too...
It's not surprising. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. And so I know some people are like, I can't believe it crashed. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's hard to get certain types of...
Yeah, sounds pretty believable to me.
Yeah. It's hard to get, like, cheese sometimes. Like, it's just anything can be in high demand these days. So it just...
Yeah.
It just feels like struggle is a thing now. It's just, if you want a thing, everyone else does too. And good luck. But I'm optimistic. I'm still going to try. Speaking of registrations, I'm get to go to my very first D23. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Yay.
So, I've never been. I'm a huge theme park enthusiast. So like I've been watching theme park content creators for as long as I could, for as long as YouTube's been a thing. So I'm excited to be there. Hopefully Ravensburger will be there. I don't think there's been any official announcement, but there's really no announcements at all about what's going to be there other than Disney and Disney related activities. So I'm happy no matter what. So
I'm pretty sure Ravensburger announced like something at some place like outside of D23, like before it starts. So you got that at least. And that's a pretty telltale sign that they'll be in the actual thing.
Yeah. So that's, I told my sister, I was like, I need Lurkana and I need merchandise. So those are the lines I shall be sitting in probably for hours. And that's okay. That's what a convention is. It's a place where you sit in different
places. Well, and we had mentioned in one of the episodes before about, you know, homies helping homies get stuff. And, you know, Alec and I are going to Gen Con and you're going to be going to D23. So I don't know what the promo situation is going to be like, but we definitely need to be doing some collecting for each other.
Yes, we can meet in a parking lot and hand them underneath a secret meeting spot.
Yes, exactly. So if anyone wants to meet, you know, part of the Hakuna Lurkana team, you know, one half will be at Gen Con, the other half will be at D23, and hopefully we'll be at like Vegas and or Fort Worth. My brother lives in Fort Worth, so I'm trying to go to that one. There's maybe Chicago, who knows? I might try to judge at one of them. I don't know. We'll see.
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So PPG like has their the judge application thing online, so I've thought about signing up for that. But anyways, there's a lot of ways to engage with Lurkana in the near future. That is for sure.
I know. It's exciting. It feels like it's ramping up. It's the beginning of so many things. Mm-hmm. So it's hard not to be excited. So I think sometimes if I see anybody being like, oh, I don't think this looks good, I'm like, no, I'm too excited for anyone to feel
anything negative. Yeah, I'm too excited for the negativity.
I should probably dial that down. That's probably not helpful. But either way, super excited. Can't wait to just be in person and see people. Although I say that, but if you meet me, it's probably going to be more awkward than you imagine. But that's okay.
Hey. We take it, you know.
Yeah, right. I'm leaving the house.
It's all about the friends. Yeah, we're leaving our homes. We're going far away to do things that sound exciting, and they are a little nerve-wracking sometimes. So there's grace for that, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Anyways, main topic time. So as Katie mentioned before, we are talking about Lilo and Stitch today. So Katie, tell me about your background with Lilo and Stitch.
So, as I mentioned in our episode zero, our three top threes, this movie, it's my undisputed favorite Disney movie. Because I remember hearing about it before I actually saw it, because my dad, you know, we would get like Entertainment Weekly back then. And he was like, oh, I heard they're making a Disney movie about like a little girl who like doesn't behave. And she kind of has like behavioral issues. And I was like, oh, because as a little girl who had issues holding in out her weirdness and was told several times that I am not cool, I was like, okay, tell me more about this movie.
Yeah, so that sounds like my movie.
I didn't need to know anything else, but then I saw it and it was, I immediately love. Yeah. I've always been a Stitch fan. Like the minute I saw him, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like I want.
That's my dude.
Exactly. So all my collecting, whatever Disney collection I end up doing, whether it be, you know, like figurines or pins, it always goes to Stitch somehow. Yeah. And one of the things I really love about this movie is when I was a kid, one of my favorite movies in the whole world was by Studio Ghibli by Miyazaki called Totoro. And mm-hmm. Totoro and Lilo and Stitch are very similar where their movies, they have a very serious plot. Like if I told somebody like, oh, the plot of Lilo and Stitch is these two sisters lose their parents and one of the sisters just turned old enough to take care of her other sister. So she's doing her best to comply with state laws. Like that's the plot of Lilo and Stitch. But you would never know that because they package it in this beautiful, whimsical plot. So Totoro is very the same where it's like a family going through something really hard, but they do it with this air of lightness and magic that I think is incredible. It's an incredible thing to do. So
So
what about you? What's your history with this movie?
Yeah. Family favorite movie, I would say, just for the time it came out. I'm the oldest of four siblings. And so all of us, you know, it was like, it just came out at like the perfect time for us to really enjoy it as a family. And again, just a super fun movie. The one thing I remember about the movie is being in elementary school at the time, I remember everyone like trying to talk in the Stitch voice.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Like, yes, and the blue punch buggy, what people would yell.
Yes,
at.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, the blue punch buggy. That's exactly right. Like there was at least a solid week where like I'm sure our teachers were just like going insane because I'm not going to do it on the podcast. But you know, it's everyone was doing it. And then there was like that one kid, you know, his name was probably like Evan or something like that, mm-hmm. who made it like his entire personality for the rest of that school year or something like that, you know? And there's just so many iconic things about the movie, you know, like Lilo and Nani, but then Stitch himself and the setting of the movie. And, you know, we'll get into all that for sure. But yeah, those are the things that come to mind. Just like, yeah, so my family loved this movie and it was just like, a cultural thing that took the elementary school by storm.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, it's big in the zeitgeist when the kids are like, I'm going to talk like that.
So, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So Lilo and Stitch, it came out in June 21st, 2002. And so it was co-written and directed by Chris Sanders and Dean DeBlois. And I hope I'm saying that right. So this movie, it's not a musical, but it has an incredibly memorable soundtrack. So mm-hmm. it features Lilo's favorite musical artist, Elvis Presley, but it also weaves in music inspired by Hawaiian culture. And so what happened is that was performed by the Kamehameha School's children choir. So we're going to talk about Chris Sanders a lot in this because he essentially is the father of Stitch. But one thing I did want to point out before I go into Sanders' facts is DeBlois and Sanders, they went on to write and direct a trilogy with a misfit kid finding a misfit creature, and that was How to Train Your Dragon, which I found that out. And I'm like, that's so crazy, because if you think about it, Toothless is kind of like Stitch. So I was like,
the similarities are there.
So yeah, that's
kind of blowing my mind, because what a great trilogy. Like what a great set of movies, like How to Train Your Dragon. Those are some really good movies, and that, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, so that was something I found out when I was doing research, that yeah, they're a powerhouse team. They made Lilo and Stitch and they're like, let's do another one, this time a trilogy.
Yeah, and you know, you might think like all I think about when it comes to Disney movies is the music, and you might be right, but you know, you mentioned that Lilo and Stitch isn't a musical, but it has pretty iconic music, and that's what I associate with Lilo and Stitch more than anything is the music. I mentioned it about like the Hawaiian song that gets played after Stitch lands on Earth, and then mm-hmm. there's all the Elvis music and stuff like that. And we had the soundtrack growing up as a kid, like, you know, with my siblings. That was another way like we engaged with Lilo and Stitch, like almost on a daily or weekly basis, even though we weren't watching the movie that often, simply because we had the CD.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so when we're like in the car, it's like either the Shrek soundtrack or the Lilo and Stitch soundtrack. Like that's what we're listening to and getting hyped to. So, yeah, it's I don't know how they came up with like Elvis to be Lilo's obsession. I don't know if you're going to get into that or not, but it's just like such a genius combination that I don't know if anyone else would have come up with that except for the writers of this movie.
Yeah, I don't get into that. So it's going to remain a mystery. So if anybody knows, tweet or Instagram us at.
Exactly. If someone knows like where Elvis came from for Lilo and Stitch, like I'd love to know.
But you're right. It's so quirky that this little six-year-old is just obsessed with Elvis. It's just, like you said, it adds to that depth of character, which is incredible on such a short movie.
Yeah. So let's actually get into the things that you did prepare for today, because each week we want to highlight a little window into like some lesser known facts about the films that we're talking about. So, Katie, what do you have for our three fun facts about Lilo and Stitch?
All right. So buckle up. I'm excited. Okay. So my first fun fact is Stitch's birth story. So in the movie, he's created by Jumbo Jukiba. But in real life, he was made by Chris Sanders. So he came up with the idea, though, back in 1985. So he graduated from CalArts, which CalArts is a school where you'll hear in Disney history all over the place. It's a very lots of Pixar people came from there. But at the time, it was just a glimmer. It was just kind of he had an idea for a little creature that was mischievous. And that was it. It was like it wasn't a full-fleshed idea. So he graduated and then he started working at Disney Animation in 1987. And he worked on films such as Rescuers Down Under, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King. And eventually he was promoted to head of story for Mulan. So Mulan was like he was really up and coming in the Disney animation world. So fun fact. So Mulan. So this is a fun fact in a fun fact. Nice. So he when he worked on Mulan, like that was a big project for him. A Mulan poster can be seen in Nani's bedroom. In the scene where like they're in Nani's bedroom on the back, there's a Mulan poster. And there's also a restaurant.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And there's also a restaurant called Mulan Walk that is in downtown. So there's two references to Mulan that I found.
Huh.
There's Easter eggs all over the movie. There's also like another one where I think it's A113, which is a classroom at CalArts where lots of artists go. So that's an Easter egg that's all over the place. So fact and a fact.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
So due to his success as a leader of the story and then also his very unique art style, he was handed the reins to kind of take his own movie. The executives were like, hey, we like what you do, so what do you want to do? And his mind went back to that 1985. He was thinking like, you know, what about Stitch?
Nice.
So this other kind of part of the story is at this time Disney had two animation hubs. We think about Disney Animation being Burbank, California, but this station of art is in Florida because Hollywood Studios was a living studio. So some movies were actually animated down in Florida, including Mulan and Lilo and Stitch. So this is an important part of the story because this gave him creative freedom because essentially the executives, they don't come down to Orlando. They're in California.
Sure.
So
yeah, they're okay.
So they were allowed to do things like make a little girl love Elvis and have this very weird, fantastical Hawaiian story without having Michael Eisner coming down every day being like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. That's crazy.
Yeah. So that was very cool. They got to kind of be creative. So he knew he wanted to do Stitch. It was a lower budget movie. So, you know, they were kind of trying to do what they can. And he was thinking about where it was going to take place, and he had just gone on a vacation to Hawaii. And so he looked at a map, and he saw two names. He saw Nani, and he saw another thing called Lilo Lane. So he was like, all right, so Stitch is going to be in Hawaii, and Lilo is going to be one of the characters.
Wow.
So
just like on a whim, just like serendipitously, it was just like Hawaii, and I see Nani, and I see Lilo. So there we go. That's my story.
Yeah. So Stitch is starting to come into form here. So we've got where he's going to be. The next thing we have is his voice. So this is, you know, your kids from your elementary school classroom listen in.
Yes.
So Sanders, he originally wanted him to be like Dumbo. He didn't want him to talk. He wanted him just to be making kind of like sounds, like a very cute character that communicates with his face and maybe some sounds. But during the production, they're like, you know, Stitch needs to communicate. It would make the plot a lot better if this character can at least, you know, say something.
Like talk back to Lilo or you know,
Something like that. So obviously with animation, a big part of it is storyboarding. So during the storyboarding, Chris would use his a voice that he liked to do that would make people really mad because he was just funny. So he would do that for the storyboarding. And I'm like, well, eventually, though, it'll be somebody like Danny DeVito or somebody famous. Somebody will come in and record it. But as the story went on, they're like, I think Stitch has a voice, and it was Chris Sanders. So.
And it's Chris Sanders.
Yeah. So it didn't. Dang. So that was it. So that voice, it was locked in, and he didn't even know it. And then the last part is how he looks. So Sanders' art is very distinctive. When you look at Lilo and Stitch, it looks very different than any other Disney movie, and that's because they wanted to echo what made him unique. And a lot of that is softness, roundness.
Yeah.
If you look like Nani and Lilo, they're kind of built. Like Lilo's built very cherub-y. Like she's got kind of like the round belly and like classic kind of cute Disney shape. And even like the adults have like heavier legs. Like they're very round.
Yeah.
Not as sharp as like, you know, like a Megara or Hercules. So one of the things that they wanted to do to complement it is make a world that was soft. And the way they did it is they went back to an art technique that hadn't been used since 1940, and that's watercolor backgrounds. If you watch Lilo and Stitch, look at the background, and that's one of the things that makes it so unique is because back in the 1940s, they would do watercolor backgrounds for like things like Snow White, and it's really soft and beautiful, and they wanted to do that, and it's really complicated and hard because that's like a real painting style. Most art studios would use gouache, I think that's how you say it, but that's that really like flat kind of color, and waterboarding has that depth, so... That's basically how they got their distinct look is that they used watercolor and brought back a technology that they haven't used in a while.
Yeah, so. that's super cool. I mean, the whole art technique of it all is something to talk about for sure. And now that you mention it, I'm just thinking about like the scenes at like the beach.
Yes.
I'm thinking about the big guy that like drops the ice cream on himself.
Yes, yeah.
And stuff like that. But yeah, as I think about those scenes and try to picture what the background looks like, yeah, you're right. Like that's unique. That's not like other Disney movies that preceded it, except for, way back in the day.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
So does that count as one fact or 47 facts? It's tough to say, but...
the world may never know.
Yeah, but I'm counting it as one fact, and it's the birth of Stitch and also Lilo. So that's fact number one.
And that that's a great place to start off because, you know, if you were to... The movie is called Lilo and Stitch. And if you were to ask me, like, who is the main character of Lilo and Stitch, or like what is Lilo and Stitch about? I would say it's about Lilo. That's probably what I would say. But there is no movie without Stitch. Like he absolutely is like a cornerstone of the movie, even though there is probably, I mean, obviously Stitch has character development as well. Lilo is kind of carried through, you know, as the issue with Nani and with Cobra Bubbles and things like that. So there's that element to it, but like Stitch undergoes his own transformation throughout the movie as well. So yeah, I mean, Stitch is paramount to the wonder of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, if you take out Stitch, then like I said earlier, it's just a pretty sad movie about two sisters going through a really terrible time. So it's important that, you know, Stitch, he kind of adds this levity to a movie that, you know, covers a pretty tough topic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great insight. And he is just so lovable, like the way he looks and his art. But it's so crazy how they struck that difference because the movie literally opens with him like as a weapon. Yes. Like he is a liability to the universe. But at the same time, he also needs to be cute and adorable. And, you know, they struck the balance.
They did.
So that's
fact number one.
Yes.
Fact number two kind of bleeds into fact number one. It leads gently into it.
Okay.
So in that story I just told, you might have picked up on the fact that I said Hawaii, but Sanders is a tourist. He came up with Hawaii because he's like, I've been there and I loved being there as a tourist, but he's not a local. So after you watch Lilo and Stitch, it's very obvious that there's details in it that are just brimming with Hawaiian culture. So as a viewer, you might say, well, where did that come from? Because it's not probably coming from Sanders or Dublois. So what they did is that was like a big goal, is they wanted to make sure they imbued the movie with as much genuine culture as possible. And they did so by on-site research, which I'm always very jealous about this. None of my jobs have ever involved me going anywhere for on-site research. With like Lion King and this, I'm like, oh, you got to go there. But so that's this is a very jealous moment. But that's what they would do, is they just sent their art team and they said observe everything. So, you know, obviously nature, but also school children. Like they went up to a school and said like, hey, can we hang out and just watch Hawaiian children? And they, at first they're like, no, but then they're like, we work for Disney, and they're like, oh, and so, so they're like, of course you can. So they really wanted to see how do the kids in Hawaii act. And they also, one of the most iconic things in the beginning is that hula dance. And so they watched hula dancers. So that was one of the things they wanted to do, was make sure that they go on site, they get real input. We mentioned songs. So for the composer of the score, the film's composer, Alan Silvestri, he worked with a Hawaiian artist and audience. This is where I put a little caveat. I'm about to say some Hawaiian words. I want you guys can email me and tell me what's the right way, because I practiced, I promise. Like Lilo, I felt like I practiced.
The grace is appreciated from our audience.
Yeah. So so they worked with a Hawaiian artist called Mark Kela'i Ho'omalu to create the songs. And he created two songs, Himele no Lilo and Hawaiian Roller Coaster song. And Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride. Surprisingly, that's the one I struggled with, was the one that was in English. So they had both those songs, like I mentioned earlier, performed by a local school, the Kamehameha School's Children's Choir. So they made sure that the music sounded, you know, like it belonged in the movie and like it belonged in Hawaii. And I love those songs. It's hard not to hear it and smile. It's just such a beautiful little collection of music. So they also wanted to cast some people who grew up in Hawaii. Two people in the film that are from Hawaii and had Hawaiian culture in their background was Nani and David. So David was voiced by Jason Scott Lee, and Nani was voiced by Tia Carrere. And so Tia was actually a finalist for Mulan, but she ended up not getting the part. But that obviously they said, well, we got a part for you. So she ended up being cast to do Nani's voice, and the actors were encouraged to talk in a way that sounded natural, because obviously they write the lines, but they can't write how you say it. So they were given some pretty, you know, larger than normal creative liberty to make it sound like words that people would say where they're from. So you can kind of hear David will have an inflection that's a little bit different than, you know, you and I talk. So they wanted
like how
to
we would talk in the middle of the United States.
Yes, right. I'm from Nebraska, which, you know, I sound like I'm from Nebraska. It sounds like I'm from nowhere. So one of the things they did is they incorporated Hawaiian slang, or pidgin is one way that they'll call it. And that Hawaiian slang, they wanted to put it in a way where it was authentic, but not where people hear it and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. So they did a good – if you watch the movie with that in mind, there's lots of little lines where they work it in. So we have Tia to thank for making sure we heard the word lolo. When she goes, you lolo, means kind of a little dummy, but in a loving way.
Yeah, that is a good Easter egg. I'll have to – next time I rewatch it, I'll definitely have to like note like all the – the little slang things that they use.
Exactly. So in On Her Door, she has a word in Hawaiian that I looked up and means like trespassing, don't trespass. So there's lots of cute little Easter eggs like that that make it seem, you know, more so rich. Cool. The last thing Tia added is something so important to the movie, and I didn't realize it's something that kind of came from the characters, is they knew there was a scene where Lilo and Nani sit together and Nani has to explain like, hey, you're going away and we have to say goodbye. And that scene was hard because something about that movie that they don't explicitly say is Lilo is 6 years old and Nani's 19. So it's two kids, basically. I mean, a 19-year-old is barely an adult. So how would she say that? So Nani's voice actress Tia came up with the idea that maybe she could sing a song that expressed how she felt. And so she suggested the song that her grandma used to sing to her called Aloha Oi. So the last fact about that is Aloha Oi was written by Princess Lilialukalani in 1878, and it's a song about a bittersweet farewell. So it's such a beautiful use of using a song that, you know, kind of encompasses how she felt in that moment, until we meet again. And obviously that scene will break your heart into 1,000 pieces over and over again. You never get over that scene.
Never. You know, we talked last week about the stampede and then that moment of Simba with Mufasa and Scar. And this is almost like that moment in a different way in Lilo and Stitch, where you hear Nani singing that song to Lilo, and I'm like getting goosebumps right now. It's even just thinking back to it, it's like, that's so raw and it's so real. Like how many little girls and how many little boys have had that conversation before, you know? It's way too many.
Yeah, and one thing that is such a hard scene, and I think it's beautiful that they did it in a way where they didn't have to tell you exactly what they were feeling. They showed you what they were feeling. So I think that was a beautiful.
They like invited scene. You to feel with them instead of telling you how they felt.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know.
So, it was a heartbreaking scene, but done so beautifully. And, you know, as I'm a little sister, so, you know, whenever I see two sisters going through something, I'm like, I'm a little sister.
I can feel. Yeah. You feel for it for sure. Well, and I just think it's and I'd love to hear other people's thoughts on it, too. As far as I'm concerned, it feels like a very dignifying and like respectful way to integrate a historic culture into something that gets disseminated into the, you know, to the masses in a way that the people who are being represented, I would hope, felt well represented. And you kind of get a picture into that culture as someone who's on the outside in like a meaningful way. That's meaningful, you know, that's significant. Yeah.
And the fact that it's a song from 1878, like that's crazy. Yeah. When I looked up that fact, I was like, oh, wow. So that was like a fact and a fact there as well. So I think it's good that the Dublois and Sanders had the insight to know, you know, we can't tell the Hawaiian story. That's not something we have the right to tell necessarily, so that they brought in people to do that.
Another song you mentioned, the Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride song. I remember as a kid during that time watching the Disney Channel, you know, left and right. I think they did like some sort of – the Disney Channel did a feature on that Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride song, and they did like an interview with the guy who wrote it, and they like did an interview with the kids who were from the children's choir. And I remember thinking like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I wish they would come to my school and like ask us to do even though I could sing.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah, you're like, but I could like, try.
Yeah, exactly. At least I could try. Like, I don't know what culture I have to offer from suburbia Denver, but it's gotta be something, right?
The
not
Denver
as cool as Hawaii, but
the Denver roller coaster ride. It's a lesser one.
The lesser known,
it's funny you bring up those Disney vignettes, because I always like will reference them to my husband, like, oh, you remember when they did one on the Animal Kingdom being built? He's like, no, I didn't have the Disney Channel. I'm like, wow, how did you have a
wait, what?
Yeah,
I
thought we all just hung out and watched the Disney Channel all summer long, and that was
pretty much.
So that was, you know, that fact ended on a sad note, but the last fact, it's fun time. Yeah. This is a true fun fact. One of the reasons that so many people like myself love Lorcana is the interaction of Disney properties. You know, you get to see characters from two different movies bumping into each other in some ways that you're like, well, that doesn't happen in the movie. So Stitch has been doing that for decades. When they were promoting the film, they made several advertisements. I could find four online. Maybe there's more. But they made advertisements where Stitch would crash other classic Disney movies.
I think I remember this. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So there was four versions. The first one that I found was he interrupted the whole new world. He pulls up to Jasmine and Aladdin and he catcalls Jasmine and she goes, ooh, and then she leaves with Stitch.
Isn't he in his red spaceship or something?
Yeah, he pulls up in that.
And they're on the carpet. My gosh, that is so funny.
Yeah, and Aladdin goes, get your own movie. So that was kind of like the advertisement was get your own movie is like, so the next one, he was a true carefree surfer and he rides a giant wave and that wave crashes over the rock where Ariel is trying to sing her triumphant Part of Your World reprise.
Oh,
crashes over her and cuts off her song prematurely. Obviously she was upset. So
yeah,
The next two are going to be very hurtful to you because they're two of your favorite movies.
Okay. So I don't know how hurtful they'll be, actually. This might be pretty sweet. This is the crossover we've been waiting
for. That's true, right? So, and everybody, you can find these on YouTube. But one of them is Stitch's scene crawling on the ballroom ceiling of where they're singing or where the song Tales of the Time.
I remember that.
Yeah, so he crawls and he gets on a little chandelier or big chandelier and he crashes it down and it ends the song and she goes, "I'll be in my dressing room." so that one, it's beautiful. It's a great commercial. So the last one, it's Rafiki time. So Rafiki, it's that triumphant. He's about to hold Simba. He's standing on Pride Rock. Iconic. All the animals are there. Yes. And then he lifts it up. And it's Stitch.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
And it's so good because, you know, back then we didn't get content like that, you know?
Yeah.
So it was so wonderful to see. I mean, I guess, you know, we had Who Frames Roger Rabbit. That was kind of something like that. But this was Disney Renaissance interacting with each other. And so the whole plot was Stitch, get your own movie. And I even found like an advert from the original DVD where it was like, it was a funny thing. It was like a fake documentary about how Stitch had hung around the Disney studios for decades looking for work. And finally they gave him his own movie. So they were doing lots of stuff with Stitch.
That's hilarious.
Stitch lore. So
yeah, that's so perfect too. That's hilarious.
So Stitch, he's crashing the theme park. So, you know, I'm a theme park person.
Yeah.
So one fun picture to look up is he got his own attraction briefly in Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
It replaced this very short-lived and terrifying ride called Alien Extraterrestrial Challenge.
Okay.
Or Extraterrestrial Encounter, I think.
Okay.
So either way, they changed it because that was too scary and they replaced it with Stitch. And to celebrate that Stitch had his own attraction, he took over Cinderella Castle and he covered it in toilet paper and spray paint that said Stitch is King on it. It was very controversial. Like, you can find people where, because like they went to Magic Kingdom for their magical day and the castle was covered in toilet paper. But I think those people got the most magical thing of all. So.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so they didn't know what they had. So nobody ever complained about that. There's also people who complain about the pink castle. You'll hear that on the internet. People get very mad about the cake castle. Don't complain. Yeah, no.
I feel like that's like if you're digging for an Elsa Spirit of Winter, you know, in Lorcana packs because you need her for your playset, and then you get an Enchanta Elsa instead. Like, come on, how can you be upset with that?
It's true, yeah. You gotta, I mean, that's, you're like, oh, I can't play with this one. It's still great.
Yeah,
so.
It's still amazing.
So the last thing he took over that I'll cover is the Enchanted Tiki Room, originally in California. You can also find it in Florida.
Okay.
And there's a Tiki Room in Tokyo Disneyland, and in that one, Stitch is taking over. And so it's fun. It's very fun. I went to it in Japan, and they gave us like a little computer. They're like, this is a translation, but you didn't need it. You could get the gist of what was going on without the translation.
Sure.
But they were like, there's all this stuff going on, and they find out it was Stitch, and they're like, oh, it's Stitch, only they say Stitchy, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And then he busts out, and then they play some songs on the ukulele, and he sings with all the birds and blooms.
Oh, it's wonderful. That's so cool.
So Stitch has always been going places he wasn't invited, and I think that's my third fact, is that Stitch, he shows up where he's uninvited all the time.
Yeah. Man, that's so cool. Yeah, he is a little prankster, isn't he?
Yeah, he's canonically. It's been that way since 2002. Like,
yeah,
he's never
from
not
the beginning.
Been
yeah.
A rascal.
I just think of, like, the different instances of, like, at the start of the movie, you know, where, like, he's getting adopted by Lilo and Nani, and he sees Jumba and Pleakley, and he's like shaking his butt at him, and you know, he's just like a little prankster, like through and through, the punch buggy thing, or, you know, like, yeah, it's funny.
I know, he has so many good lines. So like, even like as an adult, I'm like, well, maybe I could quote Blue Punch Buggy, because, you know, it's just funny. It's funny stuff he does. He's a good character in the way that, yeah, he's like a little clown.
And then his cackle.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I would do it, but I fear hearing it later.
Yeah, I fear even trying, but yes.
So I'll do it privately. Yes. Yeah, so it's a private affair. But so those are my three facts. The first one is the birthplace of Stitch. Number two is how Hawaiian culture got embedded into the movie. And lastly, Stitch has always been messing with other properties.
Amazing. Well, those are great facts. Thank you, Katie.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And now that we've had some time to think about Lilo and Stitch, such a great movie, the fine folks at Ravensburger have given us a good number of cards, I would say, from Lilo and Stitch. I think we're at 13 cards from the Lilo and Stitch universe, and they break down as such. We have 6 Stitch cards. We have 2 Lilo cards, and then Nani, Cobra Bubbles, Jumba, Jukiba, and Gantu also have they all have 1 card each. And then there's also an item, the Plasma Blaster from the first chapter. So
yeah, I thought there was more. I was surprised doing the research for this. I'm like, there's only 13. They're very impactful cards. So good job as far as these cards. They carry a heavy burden of being very memorable.
Yeah. Yeah, they are great cards. And I guess I do want to take a second just to, you know, shout out Citizens of Lorcana, you know, Gantu, a favorite card right there. I appreciate your guys' love for Gantu for sure. And, you know, maybe he'll be relevant one day. I actually thought maybe Gantu will be relevant with the Illumineer's Quest that's coming out with Ursula. You know, I don't know like what level there is, but there might be one thing Ursula might try to do is like send a whole bunch of characters that are going to try to get you. But if you have Gantu out, you know, characters with 2 cost or less can't attack your characters. So.
Yeah. No, and the flavor is good with Gantu. So yeah. I know some people in our league, they'll talk trash on him, and I don't think that's fair. I don't think he's done anything wrong.
Nothing wrong.
Obviously he's not an Elsa or an Ursula, but so the other thing I'd like to state very early, very firmly, is there's no Agent Pleakley, and that's a crime. So, you know, I say we need to be positive, but I can't be positive about that because he's one of my favorite characters.
We need representation for the one-eyed Disney characters that we have.
It's true. And speaking of one eye, so he iconically has this little Viewmaster. He's always like carrying around. So I went through a phase where I loved Agent Bleakley and I couldn't do the Stitch voice. So I thought it was very funny when he takes his Viewmaster and he hands it to Jumba and goes, "Here, educate yourself."
Yes.
And so I would say it. And I don't think anybody else knew what I was saying. So I just sounded like this really mean little 13-year-old. So not helpful to quote that, but it's still one of my favorite scenes. And if we can make it a thing, it is. Because, he just hands it. And I always think it's so funny because it's such a
great character. Agent Pleakley.
I know. He's so good. And he's so funny. And I just, his scenes with like his little wig and when he's like being the tourist wife, it's so good.
Yeah. Super good. We definitely need to get that guy in the, in Lorcana for sure.
So he's coming. There's no way. They can't overlook Pleakley.
Yeah.
But other than that though, I mean, all the cards so far I think are pretty good. The Plasma Blaster obviously has been outpaced by the fact that there's Plasma Blasters built into several other characters at this point. So I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of Plasma Blaster play anytime soon, but it's still a cool looking card. And all the other ones,
the art is great.
Yeah. So, but I always feel bad that, you know, you got Hans who's like shooting every time he quests and all sorts of ones, which in my head, anytime someone shoots for 2, I'm like, it's a Plasma Blaster. That's not true. That's not. But in my mind, they have a Plasma Blaster when they're shooting, when they quest.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty much, or like the Robin Hood card that gets to ping. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I'm like, he's got a Plasma Blaster, but canonically.
Yeah. Well, I wholeheartedly support your love for Pleakley, and he definitely needs to be in the game. I'm trying to think of where he belongs. He, you know, they put the 1 Jumba card in Emerald. I just feel like Pleakley feels Emerald to me. I don't know. Where do you think he would go?
Here, educate yourself could be you draw a card. So,
he could be an amethyst. So, I could see it.
Or, you know, sometimes green, you get to, you know, your opponent discards and then you draw, make it a sudden or a hypnotize, but it's Pleakley this time. So it's better.
Oh, yeah. That'd be kind of cool.
So,
hypnotize on a body.
Yeah. So,
okay. I like where we're going with that. And then, you know, speaking of Pleakley, I want to say I think Jumba got robbed. He got his card in the first chapter, and then immediately in Rise of the Floodborn, Verana came out, you know, Emerald. She's a 5/5, he's a 4/5, but they both quest for 2. I guess maybe like the subtypes, the categories might make a difference. Like she's a villain queen, whereas Jumba is like an alien and an inventor. So maybe that makes a difference, but probably not. Like, come on, we need a playable, or at least like, it's not like he has to be competitive, but like something where you don't just have like a card that's obviously trumping him.
Yeah. I do draft him every time I see him because I feel like he's like a good workhorse in drafts. I will say, you know, Jimba, he's not in the meta, but he is in my heart when it comes to limited.
So. Yeah, for sure. You're exactly right. I mean, if you're at the last like four or five cards in the pack, he's inkable. He's a good five drop. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, he'll do the job. Whatever job that is, it's just kind of being a problem, but just a mediocre problem.
And then the last character that I think definitely needs some representation. I really want David in the game. We should get I know we just got Nani and she only has one card, but we definitely need David. I think when I think of David, I either think of him in his like restaurant performance outfit where he's got the things on his ankles and he's breathing fire, or he's surfing. So, you know, I think, he could go in like Amber or Ruby and he could be doing one of those things.
Yeah. David is such an underrated character because he's so sweet. He's like the sweetest love interest in a movie you could ever imagine where he's like, I'm just here for you and I'll help any way I can. And I'm like, David.
Yeah.
He's the Disney prince we need.
Yes, David. Exactly. Yeah. He's definitely like a dude worth imitating, you know? When we think about like men in Disney movies, that's like definitely one that's like, all right, we could all take some notes from that guy.
Yeah. He's so wholesome. So David, but if he breathes fire, that'd be pretty cool too. You could like shoot somebody for three, but then you take one because he accidentally catches some stuff on fire.
Yes. Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. So,
be like a fun Teeth and Ambition.
Yeah. So, yeah, like Teeth and Ambitions, but on a body. Yeah.
So that'd be kinda cool. I'm a little sad there's only two Lilo cards because I would love to see a hula dancing Lilo, like I practice. That would be so very cute.
Oh, that would be cool.
And then the other one I kept thinking about is if there was an item called Peanut Butter Sandwich and the effect could be Pudge controls the weather and you sacrifice this item to exert all opposing characters because Pudge controlled the weather.
And would be so cool.
I know. So I would also like to see Scrump. I was thinking about Scrump and I adore Scrump.
Yeah, that would be a great item.
So Scrump could be, you know, I don't know what it would be, but I just love that
Scrump has little heavy amethyst vibes to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like something voodoo-ish about it, you know.
That's true, yeah.
And well, she does have like, the pickle voodoo forks of her friends.
Yeah, or my friends deserve to be punished.
Yeah, exactly. That could also go in amethyst. I feel like Dr. Facilier would be like two thumbs way, way up with those ones.
Yeah, right. He'd be like, I love Scrump. Get in here. Are there any other characters or songs where you're like, come on, it's asking for it. We got to work it into the game.
Well, the Hawaiian songs, Hei Mele no Lilo and Hawaiian Roller Coaster Ride, like somehow got to get into the game. I don't know how. I did kind of go back and forth, and I don't think Ravensburger needs to like limit themselves necessarily, but I did kind of think like, okay, if we're going to put songs in, you know, you put in iconic songs like Let It Go or A Whole New World where you have characters from the movies that are actually singing these songs. Is it possible to integrate songs that weren't sung by characters? And I really hope the answer is yes. There's a part of me that thinks like maybe they wouldn't do it, but I really hope they do. And these are some songs that I could see like maybe they would belong in like Amber or Sapphire that either they like heal or they ramp somehow or they do both. You know, you kind of the How Far I'll Go card from Moana, you get to like it replaces itself and you get to ramp with it. Maybe like you could do something with these songs where you get to heal and ramp or something like that. Also, the song that you brought up that Nani sings to Lilo, you know, that sounds like, I don't know, that could be like a really powerful healing song. I don't know. It's sung by a character. So I don't know.
It's true. I feel very humbled in this moment because up until this moment today, I didn't realize that all the songs were sung by characters, which sounds very silly now that I'm saying out loud. But yes, I guess that is a point that all the songs that are currently songs are singable songs. And the songs you mentioned, no one sings them. So my brain, it's melting. I'm like, oh my God, how did I never put those two together? But yeah, I guess you're right that this who sings the song it comes into it. But yeah. I
don't think Ravensburger would need to limit themselves that way. You know, I hope that they would put, you know, I think I mentioned when I talked about Treasure Planet during episode zero, there's that song I'm Still Here. And that's not sung by a character in the song or in the movie, but I it'd be awesome if that song did get representation in the game. You know, and I don't know how hard it would be to get an Elvis song in the game, but I just always think back again to the beginning of the movie. There's something about the beginning of Lilo and Stitch that I guess I resonate with, where, you know, she's at home and Nani's like trying to get back home and she like has the front door nailed shut and she's just like laying down on her back and just listening to Heartbreak Hotel. I think that would be hilarious. You know, like, cause she's like kind of sad when she's listening to that song. And so maybe like you could sing it and it would like reduce the strength or maybe even the willpower of a character. So like if a character has 5 willpower and they have 4 damage on it, but this reduces their willpower by 1 or 2, then they're banished or something. I don't know that.
Yeah, no, I love the mood of that scene. So yeah, having that worked into a song where she's like, leave me alone to die.
Yeah. Like,
so good.
So dramatic. Yeah.
It is. But I mean, anybody that's ever gone to work can relate to that sentiment.
Yes. Yes. That's just leave me here while I lie on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would also be cool, like, if we had the red spaceship, you know, at the beginning, Gantu's like, he took the red one. or maybe it was one of the other aliens that said he took the red one, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be like a cool item. And maybe it could get you to and from locations like super efficiently or, you know, something like that. Also, similar to that could be like Lilo's pink and purple big wheel that they like ride all around the island with. Like that could be like a cool item that could get you to and from locations.
And that's a stolen. That's like Grand Theft Big Wheel. Stitch beats up that little girl and takes it.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
So that'd be a wonderful item in the game.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I wanted to surprise this for you real quick. We don't need to take too much time, but you know, there are 6 Stitch cards. So I wanted us to do a quick tier list for the 6 Stitch cards. And we're going to start with art. So we'll do like S tier, A tier, B tier, and C tier. So for the 6 Stitch cards, how would you put them into a tier list as far as art goes?
I mean, Rockstar Stitch, I don't need to know the other categories. That's S tier for all of them. But yes. Definitely for this category, it is definitely going to be S tier is Rockstar Stitch. I'm pulling up the Lurkana app. Available on the App Store. So yeah, I think Rockstar Stitch is definitely S tier.
Yeah.
The Surfer Stitch, that's probably A tier.
Yeah.
I think you could debate it's S because of the sunglasses. That's just so
the sunglasses cool. And you get Pudge and the peanut butter sandwich.
I know.
And it does it does capture like that watercolor kind of thing you're talking about.
Ugh. And then I'm very partial to the art of New Dog because it's cute.
It's adorable.
You know, for those who haven't seen the art, he looks like a little puppy. He's pretending to be a dog.
Yeah.
And has the greatest line where she goes, David, I got a new dog. He goes, owie, you sure that's a dog? And she says, uh-huh, he used to be a collie before he got hit by a car. And that's great.
Iconic. So used to be a collie. Yeah. As if like getting hit by a car changes.
The art on that, it's the shading, the porch, all of it. That's another A.
It's so good.
Oh gosh.
I don't even know. It's like, can you even put any of these like lower than?
Yeah, I think at worst it's like an A, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Like maybe we just rank them, but I don't even know if you can do that.
I know. It's so hard.
All 6 of them are so good.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's obviously the Stitch, what's it, the little rocket where he's got his little, like, fists and he's coming at you. That one's very funny. And I got the playmat because I legally had to as a Stitch fan. I had no option but to get it.
Yeah. Hey, if Stitch is on a mat, then that's a good mat.
You got to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my mat now.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then there's Abomination, which naturally I always shy away from aggro Stitch where he seems a little spooky. So, you know, I'll put that in B just for personal preference.
Okay,
you know, I'll say
sure.
that's not my Stitch.
Yeah.
And then the Covert Agent, I'm so sad that card has no place in the meta currently because
I know
it's so cute. It's every time I see it,
he's
I'm
adorable.
Like, oh,
look
my
at that
goodness.
That pink shirt he's wearing. He's just having the time of his life.
I know, he's got little little binoculars. He's got the same sunglasses, the same as the one as the surfer, but these ones are green, which that means headcanon at home. He has like all these sunglasses in different colors depending on what he's doing that day. Yes, and I like course. To think that. So, yeah. So yeah,
Grace Tran really did a great job with that one. That's for sure. Yeah.
So in conclusion, they're all S tier somehow.
Yes, they're all S tier. I mean, that's the only way to put it.
Yeah.
Did you talk about Stitch Little Rocket?
Yeah, that's the one, the matte one. Oh, that's just such a funny face. Of course. But the sunset's so cute in that. And the,
I know, the sunset. I do. Yeah. There is something cool about the ones where he does have six arms.
It is, yeah.
You know? And so even if the original Stitch Abomination, isn't, he's kind of squinting. But then there's the D100 Stitch Abomination.
That one's very fun.
And that one is, and all of these were drawn by like original artists. So I'm not going to mess up that guy's last name, but Alex Cooperschmidt. Yeah, there we go. He must have worked on the movie. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it has my favorite line of, and he steals everyone's left shoe.
Yes.
So,
okay, and now playability. We'll do it real quick. How would you like tier list their playability?
Okay, so somehow Rockstar Stitch still S, because I believe that card is so versatile, the fact that you can shift.
Sure.
It's got tons of lore. You're drawing cards.
Yeah.
So I just think
he is a three quester. That's hard to.
Yeah, so he'd come at you from three different angles of goodness. Which means if that's S tier, the new dog, the one drop is an A tier.
Yeah, the shift target.
Yeah, so he's got to be A. Carefree Surfer, I would say, is A. Obviously, getting to turn 7 is fragile. But once he's there, he's a problem. And once again, you get to draw a card. So hopefully aggro decks come into favor. That is, or I guess tempo would get you. Because it's hard. Because if it's aggro, you're not getting to turn. I don't know.
Yeah, you're usually not inking to 7 with aggro. But those amber decks that do like to go kind of long, he does fit in there, like an amber ruby deck.
Yeah,
with Mufasa or something, he fits in there really well.
So he's B, I think, because when you get to play him, he's great, but it's hard to get to that situation where you're getting him out. And then, you know, Stitch Abomination, I'll say C. You know, he's inkable as a 6 cost. He quests for 3. He's got a big butt. So yeah.
He doesn't have an ability, you know. So for 6 ink, you kind of want him to do something on play or affect the field in some way. But he does have the exact same stat line as Mufasa. You know, funny enough, who is a common in Sapphire from the first chapter. But, you know, I think it's because he has a large willpower. That's what makes him a rare in Ruby. You usually don't get it where you have like more willpower than strength in Ruby. So I think that's why he's a rare.
Yeah, he's situationally rare.
Yeah.
And then Covert Agent, that's probably a C. It's a very expensive card. Yeah, that doesn't do so much. And then Little Rocket, I think you can also hang out and see. You know, there's a time and a place for a Little Rocket. I don't know all the time, but.
Sure. I have him right now in my Ruby Sapphire deck because if I'm going to try to slow down other aggro decks, like he comes in handy and I can do a pretty clean 1-for-1 by playing him. So for some more control decks that are just trying to slow people down on those early turns, he's pretty clutch. I'd probably put him in like B or maybe even A, but yeah, I get it for sure. So anyways, that was a fun little thing I thought we'd do. Just talk about the Stitch cards.
Ugh. So yeah, I mean, as you can see by this conversation, prepping for this episode in general was really hard because it's something that I think we could talk about for hours. Like there's things I'm like, I want to say, but I don't know if you guys want to listen to a podcast for 4 hours. So
yeah,
it's just one of the movies, the art, the story, the characters, the cards, all of it together makes this like beautiful, special movie. So
yeah.
So we'll put a bookmark. We'll stop talking about it today, but you know, there's Stitch 2. There's, a TV show. So, you know, there could be more Stitch in our future, but for our audience, what is your favorite part of Lilo and Stitch? Have you ever watched the expanded universe of Lilo and Stitch? What do you hope to be seen moving forward, either from the original Lilo and Stitch or from the expanded universe? Because there's technically, you know, 625 other experiments that you know, they don't have cards yet.
Yeah, very true. I mean, we got like all the 7 dwarves and now we're getting all these puppies. Like, what if we got a bunch of experiments?
Exactly.
Could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, so sound off on Twitter, Instagram. We'd love to hear your takes. I love armchair illumineering is a passion of mine. So
it is
I'm
fun.
Always happy. Yeah.
It is a good way to spend some time. So now, in addition to your responses to today's episode, each week we like to turn the mic to you, our listeners, to see what questions you have about Disney and the world of Lorcana. This week we have a question from Steven that reads, I would really love the story of the lore of Lorcana, quote unquote, to get fleshed out more. How would you like to see the lore of this new world slash game play out? Like in a comic book or a Disney Plus animated series? Or so, Katie, like, clearly there's a story going on within the card game, and we've kind of got bits and pieces of it, but like, how would you like to see the lore of Lorcana kind of be like exposited to us, so to say?
Yeah, it's interesting because admittedly, I haven't seen any of the animated shorts, which is kind of that's on me. I know. I don't know what's going on. So,
well, now you have some homework this week. So,
I know, right? So, my homework. So, I need to watch that. But also, I think it's something where I think it might be intentional. I don't want to speak for the creators of the game where, you know, there's so much story just by being Disney that the lore for now isn't the most important part. The most important part is getting people playing the game.
Yeah.
And then I feel like it's building.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to take it like personal that I don't know it, because obviously A, I haven't been engaging enough, and B, I don't think they're stressing it as much as, you know, like you read like Magic the Gathering has like novels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's light compared to that, but I'm surprised there isn't more, and that's why I think there will be more, is because Disney's a story company. Like, they're not going to miss an opportunity to
tell a story.
Yeah. So as far as how, I would love to see a graphic novel or a book at the minimum. But man, when you bring up Disney Plus, you know how they did that Star Wars series where they collaborated with different anime studios? That could be so fun.
Oh yeah, that would be sweet.
Yeah, so like the collaboration where there's little shorts, because I think the story of Lorcana is always going to be a little bit of like the fact that it's glimmers, like these characters aren't necessarily there, they're glimmers of characters. I think a short style could be very good for this kind of story, because it's not necessarily one character going on one journey.
And how cool would it be if they like integrated it, like already established artists
from
the cards themselves, and they got to do like little bits and pieces to help exposit the lore of Lorcana, you know?
Yeah,
you got some of these heavy hitters like Nicholas Cole or Matthew Robert Davies or someone like that to like help you out with that. That would be so cool.
Yeah, like the character designs and things like that. And if it's a short, then you don't have to worry about it being perfect so much as like a movie. It's just, you know, a little bit of a story.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you get a little short every couple months, then that kind of – I know we got shorts, but, you know, more like a cinematic kind of – you know, like Pixar and Disney, they'll do like their shorts. They're like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I'd love to see something like that. So that's my Christmas wish, is that there's some sort of – Like Steve suggested, an animated series on Disney Plus where we get lots of little tidbits that make one big story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be amazing. I think for me, I would actually like to spend some time, and I don't know if it would be something we do like on this podcast or like in a different venue, but I would love to like reread all the flavor text of all these cards and try to put some dots together. The line that Rochelle had during the Lorecast is still kind of ringing in my ears, that like there's still more to be discovered within the cards that have already been released. But kind of like an in-game way of moving the story forward is helpful for me. And I really think they're going to hit that with the Illumineer's Quest. That really feels like they've kind of been light on the lore up to this point. I think I said this last week. They've been light up to the lore so that they can get to the Illumineer's Quest. And then within the Illumineer's Quest, there's going to be lots of pieces that, you know, lay it out for us to the point where we get to that final, the little golden pack that has the one card in it. And, you know, we're not supposed to know what's in there. And I think like whatever is in there it might be playable, but it might have far more to do with the story of Lorcana than it does the actual game itself.
I think the gif I keep sending to people is the Kronk going, oh yeah, it's all coming together. I feel like that's how the story is going to feel soon.
Yes.
Like it's all going to come together.
It's all going to come together. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure the folks that are behind it all and have been thinking about this for, you know, 3-4 years are like, oh yeah, it's all coming together, you know? But also, you know, you mentioned some physical media like a magazine or a manga or a comic book or, you know, something like that, a book, a novel of its own, you know, that would be super cool. And then, but yeah, you know, like an animated thing that like Disney wanted to partner with Ravensburger, like explicitly on something to make something for Disney Plus. Oh my goodness. That would be super cool.
I know. D23, announce it. I'll be there. Yes. Covering it. So, yes. You know, speaking of armchair illumineering, I would love to see something like that. I think fans would be ready for any kind of media that they send at us.
Sure. Sure.
So, Stephen, thank you for your question. If you, the listener, would like to have your question answered by us, feel free to contact us at questions@HakunaLorcanaPod.com. Or you can reach out to us to Twitter at Hakuna Lorcana. And if your question is selected, we will send you an exclusive Hakuna Lorcana sticker for you to show off to all your friends at League. So, Stephen, you'll be getting a sticker in the next week or so. So thank you so much for your question.
Yeah. And shout out to our Twitter and Instagram winners who won some of the giveaways that we did into the launch of our show. I just want to take a minute to thank everybody for, you know, listening to us at the start of our show. Like the feedback that Katie and I have received has been overwhelming, and it's been we're very appreciative of all that. So, thank you for interacting with us on Twitter and Instagram. And yeah, we're excited to get the show off the ground and see where it goes. And if you enjoyed spending time with us today, please feel free to leave us a review on your podcasting platform of choice. I promise we read them, and we appreciate the support from all of you. So, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you know, those 5-star reviews really do go a long way to please the algorithm. So we will take those for sure. And next week, you know, we've been doing some more recent movies that came out, you know, when Katie and I were alive, but we're actually going to turn the clock back several decades to cover the classic film, The Sword in the Stone. So if you haven't seen The Sword in the Stone, don't worry, because Katie, correct me if I'm wrong, but 50% of the hosts here at Hakuna Lorcana have not seen The Sword in the Stone either.
That is a correct accusation on my part.
So you all can catch up with Katie, and I'm going to catch myself up because I love the movie so much as we rewatch the Sword in the Stone. As always, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And until next time, Hakuna Lorcana means no worries.